guys. You are tuning into our show, Fit to be Tied, on 90.7 The Capstone. My name is Whitney Pape. I'm the coordinator of group exercise with University Recreation.
And I'm John Jackson. I'm the associate director of University Recreation. I work with fitness and personal training and group exercise at the Student Recreation Center.
So just to tell you a little bit about our show, we hope that each week when we talk to you guys and you guys listen in with us on Sundays, that we can maybe answer some of your questions about fitness, about wellness, nutrition, things like that, things that you maybe hear in the media, questions that you may have, topics that are of concern just in the fitness industry today. So we're going to kind of be looking at goal setting.
Yeah, hopefully over the next 14 or 15 weeks, we'll be hitting on a lot of different topics for you guys, a lot of frequently asked questions that you hear, a lot of things that you hear in the media, you see in the media, a lot of new research that's out there. How do you implement that into an overall fitness or wellness program and that sort of thing? And with that being said, as Whitney was saying, we're going to talk about goal setting today, spend a little bit more time on that. We have a couple of special guests that will be joining us later on the show, but we're going to spend a little time talking about goal setting, some advantages and disadvantages of doing that, how to do it correctly if you're going to do it, and then a lot of the questions that we get into with our job at University Recreation on a regular basis.
Yeah, so tune in because we will be bringing on, like John said, some special guests talking about nutrition, things like that, which I think is kind of one of the big points. I mean, we could all make up workout plans and find things to do, but sometimes we forget about the nutrition part of it. And that can be a really good goal to choose. Or maybe you don't want to choose a goal. So hopefully we can help you guys figure that out within our show. And tuning in towards the end of the show, we'll have some questions that you guys may think about, maybe want to ask us, that hopefully we can answer.
And even though we do, our background is more fitness related, with us working in University Recreation. Whitney's background is a personal trainer and a group exercise instructor, and now running our group exercise program with University Recreation. And my background is more of an exercise physiologist. We're going to be focusing a lot on the physical part of wellness, but that's not to say that's the only thing that we're going to focus on. We're going to try to hit on the entire wellness spectrum and talk about all of those benefits that you get from being physically active. And we're not just talking about necessarily an exercise program. We're talking about just being more physically active in general and all of those mental, emotional, spiritual, psychological types of benefits that you get from it.
And it may even not be the physical, mental, emotional. Maybe it's just goal setting just in your life. Maybe you can make it more of a lifetime, a life goal change. So hopefully in the next, few minutes that you guys have with us, we can start to talk more about goal setting.
Yeah. And one of the reasons that we actually chose this topic, there was an article published in the CW in the Crimson White about a week ago on keeping New Year's resolutions. And if you've ever been a part of a fitness facility before, you know that this is our busiest time of year. And we're somewhat overrun this time of year with the New Year's resolutions. And the article that was in the Crimson White was actually discussing how unsuccessful people are at keeping their New Year's resolutions. And the number that they pointed out was that only about 8% of those people who make New Year's resolutions are successful with those. So we thought that would be a good place for us to start. We're going to talk about resolutions and goals and how to be successful as we do those.
So stay tuned on 90.7 The Capstone with Fit to be Tied, and we will be right back.
This is Rachel
McDuck,
Bridget
Calabrese
from Lake Street Dive,
and you're listening to 90.7 The Capstone. Roll Tide!
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied on 90.7 The Capstone. You're with Whitney and John, and we're here to talk with you a little bit today about New Year's resolutions, some successful resolutions, and how to make resolutions successful, and goal setting. So we thought we'd jump right into that. We had mentioned before the break how an article was published recently about the fact that only about 8% of people who set New Year's resolutions are successful at that. Whitney, in your role, you see a lot of people coming in, taking group exercise classes. Do you see a lot of new faces coming in January and a lot of new faces disappearing by the end of January?
Yes. Well, it's kind of interesting. We have our regular participants, so the regular students, faculty, staff, that will always come to our group exercise classes no matter what, even when we're busy. But we do tend to see the faces, I call them the New Year's faces, that you only see right at the beginning of the semester. And I mean, some of them will stick around, and that's what we hope. We hope people will stick around and continue to exercise with us, but we are pretty realistic knowing that people, you know, do make goals and they only come in for a short amount of time, and we see a lot of faces kind of fade away. So it kind of comes and goes.
Well, basically, when we're talking New Year's resolutions, we're talking about a glorified goal is basically all we're talking about. So when we start talking about goal setting, and with what we do in the fitness industry, and we're going to talk about nutrition a little bit later on, but in the fitness industry, goal setting is very important to us. We have personal training clients come in. You have group exercise participants come in, and they all have goals. They have things that they're wanting to accomplish. In your opinion, what are some things that people can do to make their goals successful? And let me start by asking you, what are some advantages to even setting goals?
You know, it's kind of funny. Sometimes when you set a goal, you have this idea in mind that you are going to reach the goal and you see the end result and everything. And sometimes that doesn't happen. I think most of the time people have goals or make goals because it increases an awareness of what they're doing, whether it is exercise and whatever your exercise may be, whether it's, okay, yes, I want to lose some weight. Maybe it's, I want to get stronger, gain more strength, whatever it is. I think it helps to prioritize a little bit. That's one of the advantages of goal setting. And it kind of lights a fire, I feel like. I feel like once the new year starts and you realize, okay, this is the new me, 2016, let's do this. You set that goal and you stay with it for a while. And then you start to lose the momentum a little bit just as the semester goes on, you know, when you have school and class and other activities. So there's definitely some disadvantages to goal setting as well.
Let me ask you this. How do you keep, you mentioned the fact that a lot of times everybody comes in and they're fired up and they're ready to exercise and they're ready to get going. And then at some point along the way, they lose that motivation. Now, for us at University Recreation, we're unique in the fitness industry in that we have these people that come in with their New Year's resolutions, whether they're regulars or new patrons for us. They come in and you know, they're going to work out for 4 to 6 weeks, and they may or may not lose that motivation. We're unique in University Recreation in that right around that time, spring break is just around the corner. So we have a lot of goal setters that start to come in at that point as well, too. So what would you say are some ways that you can stay motivated, continue to be motivated after that initial fired up period wears off?
I think it always helps to have a workout buddy, or it helps to have a group of friends, people that you can rely on. I know sometimes you can't always rely on people, but at least finding that one motivational friend, maybe, I mean, getting a trainer, going to a class or something like that, trying not to lose focus, trying to maybe go back to the very beginning. Why did you choose this goal? And when you start to lose the focus on it, just kind of go back to where it all started. Most of the time, kind of like what you were saying, it has to do with you have your New Year's resolutions, you come in, you're on fire, you're motivated, and then that starts to kind of go away. And then there's this other wave that comes in with spring break. So kind of going past spring break, even, that's when we tend to lose people, is after spring break, because there's no need to really, in their eyes, work out as much, I guess. But yeah, having a friend, you know, having somebody you can count on, or maybe an awesome playlist on your iPod, that always helps.
But definitely setting goals, and goal setting is important for people, and helps people to stay motivated. And when it comes to actually setting goals, we always hear that acronym SMART as it's associated with goal setting. People are encouraged to set specific goals, measurable goals, attainable goals, relevant goals, and time-bound goals. We hear that all the time, and that's always really good information, but there's always the flip side to that, and it's what I like to call dumb goals as well, and it's my acronym that I made up. But there is that downside to creating goals as well, and when you buy dumb goals, what I mean there, I do think that goals have a place in keeping people motivated and working out and staying on a good nutrition plan. But there's some downsides to that. The first part, one of the things that I like to think about is that goals can be demotivating for people. It can be overwhelming for people. They get so caught up in, I have to attain this goal, that it's just completely overwhelming to them. So they kind of lose sight of what they have to do to reach that goal. Continuing on with my acronym, the U is uninteresting. Too often, goals are set by somebody other than the person that is wanting to attain them. They may want to be like somebody else, or somebody else may set those goals for them. If you get a personal trainer and the personal trainer suggests that you have these goals, it may not be what you're wanting to accomplish. So you need to make sure that your goals are interesting to you. So that would be the uninteresting part. One of the third part of this for me is the M, which is means irrelevant. And what I mean by that is people have a tendency to focus on the end and not necessarily the process, the means of getting there. And by that, what I mean is if your goal, and I hate to use the weight loss goal, but if your goal is to lose 20 pounds over the course of a few months, and after that time you've only lost, say, 15 pounds, you're going to look at yourself as being unsuccessful when it comes to that goal. When in fact you've actually lost weight, you've probably lowered your blood pressure, your cholesterol numbers are better, and all of those benefits that you get with weight loss. And then the last thing that I'll mention about that is the B in that is that I think a lot of times that goals are binding. Goals tend to make people focus strictly and solely on that and nothing else, and it becomes an unhealthy part of their life. And there's so many other parts of your life that you need to be focusing on.
Exactly. Yeah, I think for sure making sure that the goal that you pick is one that you actually want to do, and maybe looking at yourself, if it has to do with fitness, wellness, things like that, that it's not and I know we say this all the time about being an unrealistic goal, but for instance, if someone needs to lose weight, do they really need to lose weight, or is this just something that the media makes them think that they need to do? So just making sure that as we pick our goals and we kind of sift through them and what we want to do, and a goal can start at any point. It doesn't have to start at the beginning of a new year. You make your own new year. So it kind of just depends on what you want to do. We do have some guests coming up. We have Sheena Gregg. She's a registered dietitian with the Student Health Center. She's going to be coming up talking about some nutrition advice, and she has a special guest as well. So tune in on 90.7 The Capstone with Fit to Be Tied, and we will be right back.
Young Love.
This is Paul Janeway of St. Paul and the Broken Bones, and you're listening to 90.7 The Capstone.
Time. Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Whitney and John on 90.7 The Capstone. We have been talking about goal setting and the advantages, disadvantages of goal setting, fitness-wise. And so now we're going to start talking about kind of the nutrition side of it. And we have a special guest with us, Sheena Gregg, registered dietitian with the Student Health Center, who, bless her heart, serves about 37,000 students. She is awesome at what she does. So we're really glad to have her. Sheena, welcome.
Thank you so much. Like you said, Whitney, 37,000 plus students is a pretty good patient base for me. The students keep me on my toes. And so you can probably imagine in the past 6 years that I've been serving as the dietitian at UA, I have heard a lot of goals. I've definitely heard some smart nutrition goals, but I've heard some of the dumb goals, as John mentioned, lovingly. So, you know, when it comes to nutrition and especially with fitness, you know, I feel like so many of our students have those goals that come hand in hand. I'm sure when the students approach your personal trainers, they probably try to weave in those nutrition goals with their physical activity goals. I brought one of my interns today, Tom McGinnis. He is a nutrition major, and he's actually a personal trainer as well. Awesome. Made a career change to want to get the dietitian credential, so I thought he'd be a fun person to bring along today for us to talk with as well.
Welcome.
And I appreciate being invited. Can't wait to participate.
Yeah, of course. Very cool.
You know, I was, you know, as I was kind of listening to you guys in our earlier segments talking about nutrition goals, one of the things that I notice with our students is sometimes they just plop in the office and they say, I want to lose weight. And there's not necessarily any kind of action items related to that. So it's really fun being able to navigate students through those very specific goals to get them there, see what their motivation is. Certainly in January, I think we all get that I want to look hot for spring break goal. So it's kind of comical to hear those type of motivations, but it's really motivating when I have our students that come in for a nutrition appointment, and their goal may be more so related to the fact that there may be a family history of a chronic condition such as diabetes or heart disease. And so I feel like our students that have those type of motivating factors can have success with their goals, especially if we navigate that the right way. Do you guys feel that same way when it comes to the fitness goals? Mm-hmm.
Exactly the same way.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Sheena, you mentioned spring break and that coming up shortly, just around the corner for us here. It seems like we're just getting started back and we're only 2 months away from spring break. But I know this is just anecdotal probably for you, but what percentage of the students that come see you would you say have been on some type of deprivation diet? Where they, you know, they just don't know better, and their way to lose weight is to not eat or eat very, very minimally.
Gosh, I would say 75% of my students, and especially when it's some type of weight loss goal, because of course students will see me with food allergies or things related to that. But for our folks that come in with those weight loss goals, they tend to pick a random calorie number and just go with it. Thankfully now we've got resources on the internet and some different apps out there that get people a little bit closer to what their calorie goal should be. I always like to advertise to students, if they come see me, we do have some nice equipment that gives us a better idea of what their resting metabolic rate is, so we can really find that sweet spot calorie level to help with that weight loss. Because again, you know, a calorie level that works for their 5'6" friend and they're only 5'1" may be inappropriate, or vice versa. So it's nice that us as health professionals, we have that technology nowadays to be able to measure that. I know, John, with you, with your background in exercise physiology, probably appreciate some of the better accuracy we've attained over the years.
Right, yeah, the technology has definitely changed a lot in the last couple of years in what we can actually measure and everybody has access to, which is really great. It helps out a lot. Kind of going along those same lines, for you, what would you say if people actually want to change their diet, they have to change their habits, their lifestyles. If you had to throw out just a couple of habits that you think college-age students need to change the most, What would be your top two or three list?
Gosh, if I had to put my top two to three together, number one would definitely be changing that habit of skipping meals. Mm-hmm. You know, students talk so much about how they want to live a healthier lifestyle, and they have such a pressure of academics and other stressors. But if they do want to put health at a priority, I really try to get my students to think about their meals and snacks just like they would their class schedule, making that a priority, scheduling those snacks in between meals. Because if you allow yourself mentally to let those meals and snacks go to the wayside, of course it's going to be really difficult to attain those goals. You know, we have students that come in and they're chronic meal skippers. You know, they don't eat breakfast, don't really have time for lunch. So, of course, it's not surprising if we act like it's the Last Supper mm-hmm. once we get to the dining hall. Mm-hmm. Anybody would want to, you know, eat a lot more if they haven't eaten all day. And so that can be a really nice educational moment for students when you're talking to them about eating a little bit more frequently throughout the day. Another thing that I notice with our students is they get a little too much of their calorie intake from liquid beverages, especially if, you know, not even just sodas, but a lot of our tasty coffee beverages mm. on campus. You know, students want to get caffeinated, and sometimes they do that a little too syrupy at times, for lack of better words. So trying folks to get mindful of that. And then even when they start thinking about their nutrition goals, they always want to focus on what they should take out of their diet. They think, oh, I'm never going to go eat frozen yogurt with my friends again, or we're not going to do that this year. And so when you start thinking about a type of food that you're never going to eat again, we kind of start to obsess about it, because yes. I like almonds. You know, mm-hmm. I eat them every now and again, but I don't think about them all the time. But John, if you told me tomorrow, Sheena, you can never eat almonds again, I would obsess about them, or I would think, okay, I've got to go big or go home because I'm never going to have them again. So I think getting students out of that mindset can be really helpful in terms of getting them to really think about those goals. And, you know, Tom, knowing that you are a personal trainer as well and are now in this new field of nutrition, what kind of questions have you heard from clients that you've had?
I think typically people feel they have a really good understanding about nutrition because of the information that's available via the internet or in magazines, or their very fit friend tells them how they need to eat. And really, that has nothing to do at all with how they need to eat in conjunction with their lifestyle. And I think that's what I get the most. So what I try to impress upon anyone before goal setting or before deciding what type of fitness routine to get into or how to eat is just to start with some realistic expectations that are specific to them. So sort of just put away all the other advice and information that they're inundated with from so many other sources, and let's just focus on you and what do we need to do to get you to where you want to go.
No, I think you make a great point, because I think oftentimes students come into the office or any kind of client, they say, oh, well, my girlfriend said that this worked, or my Aunt Susie Jo just lost 50 pounds from this. You know, how can I do this? And so, again, I think we bring up some great points that it has to be individual.
Right. It's funny you mentioned a couple of times in your top list there about the habit of eating and how we a lot of times unknowingly just snack. Mm-hmm. You and I were having a conversation the other day about the study that was done. I think it was at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, where at their food science laboratory, where people were going into a movie and they had popped popcorn 5 days earlier, and they gave away free buckets of popcorn. It was either a medium bucket or a large bucket. And they said that the popcorn was so old and so bad tasting that it was actually very squeaky and tasted terrible. But what they found out was that as people watched the movie, they continued to eat the popcorn. They would take a bite. They were actually watching them as they were watching the movie. And they would take a bite and make a face about how bad the popcorn was. They would sit it down, and just a few minutes later they would pick it up. And what they found out was that the people with the larger bucket of popcorn, regardless, ate more. They ate about 173 calories more than people with the medium bucket. So anyway, a lot of interesting studies that have been done on the habits of eating.
And, most definitely.
Yeah. So we're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back on the other side of the break to talk with Sheena some more about some frequently asked questions.
And thanks for listening. We'll be back on 90.7 The Capstone.
The Capstone every Tuesday night from 6 to 7 p.m. for Brain Matters, a live show that discusses college mental health. I'm the host, Dr. B.J. Gunther, and each week we feature guests who discuss topics affecting college students. Listeners are encouraged to send questions to Brain Matters Radio at wbuafm.ua.edu, and we may answer them live on the air, so join us weekly because your brain matters.
Hi, this is Eli Gold, the voice of the Crimson Tide, and I love 90.7 The Capstone.
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Whitney and John on 90.7 The Capstone. And we're here with Sheena, registered dietitian from the Student Health Center, and she's going to take it away with some frequently asked questions.
Yes. So as you guys heard me mention earlier, having been on this campus for quite some time now, I do get a lot of interesting questions from patients. And it's funny because I'm actually part of a listserv that communicates with other dietitians that have a similar position to mine at other universities. And so I had sent a message out on the listserv earlier this week asking them what kind of questions they get from their clients as well. And it seems like students tend to have the same types of questions. The biggest one that I get all of the time, or even just comments all the time, is, I've cut carbs out because they're bad for me, right? And I can't tell you, as a registered dietitian, that if you want to make a dietitian cringe, just say that carbs are bad and you'll get the eye roll and everything else. And really, I think it's a matter of students not necessarily understanding the role of carbs and what a carbohydrate is. Because usually, you know, when we're thinking of carbohydrates, we're thinking of the starchy things like breads, potatoes, rice, and pasta. But thankfully, we can also get carbohydrate energy from fruit and dairy products. And so when you're talking to a student and they talk about cutting out bread and pasta, yet they're still eating fruit, you should see the look of shock on their face when you tell them that fruit is a carb, or that cup of Greek yogurt is a carbohydrate too. So really being able to dispel any kind of myths about carbohydrates, letting them know that the body actually needs carbohydrate energy to go into that fat burning mode, because you don't want your body breaking down that protein tissue. And Tom, what would you have to say about that too?
Yeah, I get that all the time on both ends of the spectrum, as a nutrition student and as a personal trainer. You know, during this time of the year where there's goal setting with regards to New Year's resolutions and then the spring break phenomena that happens right around that same time, you know, the first thing that I will get is, I want to look like this. And they'll hand me their cell phone and I'll see a picture of somebody that looks drastically different than what they look like. And I got to start from right there. And they're like, so I've already started cutting carbs. Now I want to start doing this, or I want to start doing that. And then you got to pump the brakes right there. And again, what I alluded to in the previous segment about setting realistic expectations that are specific to that person, you don't want people thinking along those lines. I want to look like that. Let's just worry about, you know, your health and your well-being and the right way to help you achieve what your ultimate goals are. And so carbs always come to the forefront. It's that and supplements are the two biggest topics that I have to deal with on a regular basis. And you're right, carbohydrates are necessary. They're important. I love talking to people about carbs and making sure they understand, you know, the ones that they should be focusing on versus the ones they shouldn't. You know, a lot of people think of carbs and they think of sugar. But that's not the, as you alluded to, that's not the only correlation. So there's a lot of education that goes on. And by the time they're done hearing what I have to say, that I can back up with evidence, then I love making those kind of changes in people's perceptions. And then we're able to set the foundation for establishing a healthier person, as opposed to trying to mimic what somebody looks like on the internet.
I agree. And I think you bring up some really great points, and actually brings me to a little bit of an off topic with things. But I think as a society, we are so used to inherently labeling food as good or bad. So, you know, oftentimes we say, oh my gosh, this chocolate cake is so bad, or it's so sinful for me, or today is my cheat day. So when we think about words like the word cheat day, or this food is so bad, or it's so sinful or unhealthy, it kind of gives us an unhealthy relationship or idea of food. You know, first and foremost, as a dietitian, I feel like my main role is really getting people to have a healthy relationship with food, and that's having that healthy attitude about food too. So a lot of times I get to go to our different student groups on campus, and I try to get them to stay away from that labeling of good and bad food. So instead of saying that, oh, ice cream is so sinful, like, is it really going to send us to hell? You know, come on now, you know, or is it so bad? Instead, calling those types of food your fun food or your pleasure food, I think it gives a positive spin to those types of food, to there being an understanding that we may not eat it all the time, but you're not going to be judged because you eat it. And that's the kind of society, unfortunately, that we live in with the fitness and weight loss industry. But I know I go on my little soapbox about that, and I'll move on to another frequently asked question. But I also get a lot of questions about organic versus non-organic produce. I feel like that's a really hot topic nowadays. You know, we are lucky with our campus and really just with this community having a lot of access to various farmer markets in the county of Tuscaloosa. So it's nice to be able to have those conversations with students, and really point by point, when you are comparing organic and non-organic produce, the nutrition content is going to be the same. The biggest difference is exposure to pesticides or other types of farming practices that a person may have a concern about. So it really tends to be a personal choice about exposure to pesticides versus thinking, oh, does an organic apple have more nutrition than a non-organic apple? And so if someone is trying to prioritize getting more organic produce in their diet, and knowing that organic produce can sometimes be more expensive, I like to always send students over to the Environmental Working Group's list of the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. You know, you're probably thinking, Dirty Dozen, Clean 15, what is this? And the Dirty Dozen is basically the list of the 12 produce items that you really do want to prioritize purchasing organic. These are typically going to be your produce items where you would be eating the exposed part of the fruit that would get exposed to pesticides. So think of things like grapes or apples, things that wouldn't be as risky are your Clean 15. That would be things like bananas, anything where there's a protective covering and you're not necessarily eating that exposed part. So it's fun to be able to let students know about that, and really letting them know, just because a product says that it is natural doesn't necessarily mean it's organic. So if you are looking for that organic label, the USDA has that specific organic label that's on there. And if you go to the farmers market, one thing that I like to let students know is that even though a farmer doesn't have that USDA organic label on their produce, they may be doing farming practices that actually constitute being in line with the organic guidelines. That farmer just may not be able to afford having that label on their produce. So if you have concerns about that, it's really nice to be able to have that conversation with the farmer and talk to them about that. Another frequently asked question that I get is about water intake. And, you know, Tom, with your work working with clients about exercise, what would you kind of quickly tell someone when it comes to trying to guesstimate their water intake in the beginning?
Well, there's some basic recommendations for men and for women, and most people associate 8 with the number of glasses that they should have per day. But it's not a hard to my understanding, it's not a hard and fast rule that men have to drink X amount of glasses and women have to drink X amount of glasses, because there's a lot of different things that we're doing in our lives that help to determine how we need to hydrate. So if you're exercising a lot, well, you're going to need more water to hydrate with. If you're more sedentary, then you may need a little bit less. People don't think about the water content of the foods that they eat, which certainly contributes to that. And a lot of times people think about water just in the form of water, but they don't think about the other liquid forms that they're taking in that also contain water. So I generally try to advise, if you're thirsty, have something to drink, but make a wise decision with what you decide to drink. Water is always a wise decision, but, you know, grabbing for a sugar beverage or something like that, it's typically where we want to steer people away from, because it's going to, you know, have a negative impact towards their dietary and their physical fitness goals.
I agree. And, you know, us being in this colder weather right now, sometimes I notice my patients aren't as apt to drink water during those colder months. So really trying to get them to prioritize that is so important. And like you said, there's a lot of hidden fluids that may be in dairy products, certainly with fruit. You know, when we get in the warmer months and people are eating a lot of salads, that lettuce content is going to have a lot of nice fluid content in there to stay hydrated. So I think we bring up a lot of great points, you know, just thinking about some of the frequently asked questions. And I know in our future shows, we'll be talking even more about that as well.
Awesome. Well, Sheena and Tom, thank you guys so much for being here and for talking with us about goal setting, just on the nutritional side of it. And actually, Sheena will be here with us every week with her little corner called Sound Bites, where she'll be talking about some things, some frequently asked questions each week, and she'll have topics that she'll want to focus on. But again, we're going to be back shortly to wrap everything up. And this is Fit to be Tied with Whitney and John on 90.7 The Capstone. And we'll see you soon.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and a text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At 55 miles per hour, that's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me. Whatever it is, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
This is AC.
I'm Burnham.
I'm Davis.
This is Casey.
And I'm Josh, and we're Mother Funk. You're listening to 90.7 The Capstone. Stay funky, Tuscaloosa.
And we are back on Fit to be Tied with Whitney and John, 90.7 The Capstone. And we just heard from Sheena and Tom on some ways to set goals with nutrition. And we've been talking about fitness and wellness and how you can set goals for the start of your new year.
And we thought we would close out this hour this Sunday afternoon just talking about how much I should exercise, since that's what primarily this show is going to be about, the cornerstone of what we do. I think it's important that we talk about and kind of define what those things are. And as college students, it probably sounds boring to you when we start talking about physical activity and not necessarily exercise, because when we start talking about physical activity, some of those things that we're talking about are causes of death in the United States. We know that people in the United States today are more likely to die of heart disease and cancer than anything else. And how can we prevent those things? Well, one of the most common ways across all of those top 10 types of death in the United States is physical inactivity. And so as health promoters, as health educators, what we want to do is we want people to be as physically active as possible. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean exercise. We just want people to be as active as possible. So in essence, what does that mean? We like to look at it kind of two different ways. First way is if you're looking at it for your health. If you want to decrease your risk of heart disease and cancer and all those types of things, you might not think it's a big deal now, but those decisions that you're making at this stage of your life, when you're 18, 19, 20, or 21, those are the habits that you're going to set for the rest of your life. And so we want physical activity to be one of those habits that you have. And that being said, how much should you engage in? Well, what the guidelines say is that you need to do about 30 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity most days of the week. So what does that mean? you don't necessarily have to get on a bike, a treadmill, or a Stairmaster. It means you have to do something where you're getting your heart rate up, you're sweating a little bit, you're breathing hard, and it doesn't have to be 30 consecutive minutes. As long as you get in 30 minutes, about 150 minutes a week, you can mark physical inactivity off as a risk factor for all those types of disease, which is what we want. If we wanted to take that one step farther, what we recommend in terms of exercise, and that's a question that we get a lot, is how much should I exercise? The guidelines for that are basically that you should do 3 to 5 days a week of cardiovascular exercise. By that, we're talking about those things that I mentioned earlier, bike, Stairmaster, treadmill, going for a run outside, going for a walk outside. What matters is that you're getting your heart rate up and your breathing rate up to the levels that you need to actually improve your fitness. You need to do at least 2 to 3 days a week of strength training and at least 2 to 3 days a week of flexibility. And it gets complicated when you start looking at those things. But those are some things that we'll be talking about in the coming weeks a little bit more specifically than that. But it is important that we differentiate between just physical activity, which is, when we look at it from that perspective, improving your health, compared to exercise, which is designed to actually improve your fitness level. So kind of wanted to make sure that we're clear on the terminology there. And that being said, that's a lot of times. You're talking about 150 minutes a week. That's a fair commitment of your time. When you start talking about exercise, you're talking about 3 to 5 days a week of 20 to 60 minutes of cardio, 2 to 3 weeks of strength training, and 2 to 3 days a week of flexibility training. That could add up, and we know that everybody's busy. So if you want it to be as efficient and as effective as possible, one of the questions that we get a lot is time is limited for me. That's one reason I don't work out. Whitney, what do you tell people that's their excuse for not working out? They don't have time to work out. If time is a limiting factor, what do you tell them?
Well, it's kind of like just what you said. It may be an excuse. It may be an excuse to actually get started moving. And I know we realize that people are busy, but there are points in the day. There is time in the day that you can get up from your desk at work, and instead of taking the elevator, you can take the stairs, or you can walk around a few extra laps. I think it comes down to making a commitment that if you really want to live a healthy lifestyle, if you really want to make some changes, you're going to find the time to do that. So again, I know everyone's busy, and it's kind of the way we are nowadays. We put a lot of stuff on our plate. So maybe if I'm on my way to class, instead of taking the Crimson Ride, maybe I just walk, and maybe I walk briskly where I can feel my heart rate getting up instead of just a stroll. Maybe I take an extra lap around the quad. Maybe if I'm at my desk at work or at the library, then I get up, walk around, grab a sip of water, sit back down, and make a habit of moving around and trying to find that time.
Tying this all back in together and going back into to goal setting, I think along with what you said there, a very attainable goal for a lot of people is to set aside a given amount of time for exercise and for fitness and for their health. It has to be a priority if you're going to do it. One thing as working with personal training clients a lot that we get is and their time being so limited, we only get 2 to 3 days per week with a client. We have to be as efficient as possible while giving them additional work to do on their own. Going back to that similar question for you, if you have, say 30 minutes to work out, Whitney, what do you do during that 30 minutes? How do you do it?
I'm going to find something that I actually like to do, number one.
Okay.
And I'm going to find something that maybe doesn't cost me a whole lot of money, which walking outside is free. In my personal choice, I love dancing. So taking a dance class, or going for a walk outside on campus. I think just trying to maximize your time that you have. finding something that you like to do, because if you don't like to do it, you're not going to want to do it. So that's the most important thing.
Right. We get that question so much. Should I walk? Should I run? Basically,
well, do you
what should my yeah exactly yeah. What should my intensity level be? And it goes back to if it's going to be a new habit for you, mm-hmm. it has to be something that you enjoy doing.
And it's kind of like when people say, "Well, I have to run to lose weight," and I say, "Well, do you have to?" It's kind of like, is that what you have to go do? If you don't like doing it and doesn't make you feel good to do it, find another option. I mean, you can swim in the pool. You can take a aerobics class. You can get on a bike. You can get on a Stairmaster. You can get on a Precore. You can get a friend to walk. So there's lots of really good options. So again, finding something that you enjoy, because it's not fun to do something you don't enjoy.
Right. And if you have a limited amount of time that you can work out, and again, finding something that you enjoy doing, the question is, do I walk? Do I run? If it doesn't make a difference to you, depending on what your goals are, what I tell people that I work with a lot is you need to go as hard as you can during that amount of time. If you're wanting to improve your fitness, if you're wanting to burn as many calories as you possibly can, you need to, if you've got 30 minutes to work out, if it's run, walk, if it's walk as hard as you can the entire time, you need to go as hard as you can. Yeah, make the most of that time that you have set aside for that. So I think that's very important as well. But I tell you, going back to what you were saying about enjoying what you do, I can always tell when a personal training client of mine has gotten it is when they're exercising because of the way it makes them feel, as opposed to exercising to lose weight.
Or because they think that they have to.
Right.
They enjoy it. So, well, I think we've had a pretty great show today on this Sunday afternoon. We thank everybody for listening to our show. We thank Sheena and we thank Tom. And just tune in next week to Fit to Be Tied on 90.7 The Capstone. And we've got some great topics coming up in the future that we're going to maybe talk a little about CrossFit, maybe some other types of fitness programs. And if there's things that you would like for us to talk about, you can always email us at fittobetied@wvuafm.ua.edu. And we'll see you soon on 90.7 The Capstone.